guys.
You're listening to Mama Knows Podcast with your host, Nina Cavagiola, a.k.a. Balconina. Join in weekly as she walks alongside you to navigate topics around motherhood, mental health, self-love, and relationships. The good, bad, and funny.
If you've been following me for a long time, you know that I used to talk about gentle parenting all the time. I was like fully obsessed and invested, and that's my personality. I get like fully invested and obsessed with certain things, and I have to follow them to a T, and I think that's my anxiety. Anyways, gentle parenting has literally changed my life. I love what it has done for me, but also in the last 6 months, I've really gotten away from that chatter. Because I feel like it's not a one size fits all. And today I'm so excited because I'm talking to Dr. Tina Payne Bryson, who is a parenting expert. She speaks internationally to educators, parents, camps, and clinicians. And she's the author of Bottom Line for Baby, No Drama Discipline, The Whole Brain Child, The Power of Showing Up, some of the best parenting books out there that I've personally read, and I know a lot of you also have. She's also a psychotherapist and the founder, executive director of the Center for Connection in California, and she is a mom. She literally does regular mom things. Like before our call, she was like, yeah, I got to go get my son from football practice, etc. Totally relatable, totally funny. She puts this like humorous spin, realistic spin on parenting and how to be the best version of a parent. I am so excited. So let's jump right in. Hi, Tina. I'm so excited you are here today. I'm such a fan. Like I said, I told you off mic, I feel like you paved my parenting for me with your books. And when I heard you on Dr. Aliza's podcast episode, and it was the episode about what the heck is gentle parenting. Uh-huh. After I heard that episode, I was like, I need to talk to Tina ASAP because people need to hear this information everywhere. So I'm so excited we were able to make this work, and I appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Yeah. So I tell people all the time on my podcast, I have experts here, and you're considered an expert, right? And people always think, oh yeah, she's a therapist. She's this and that. Like, they don't have any issues. So I always ask my expert to share, what is something that you're struggling, and your mom, what is something you're struggling with in your parenting right now?
Well, listen, if you read my books or watch any of my social media, you'll hear lots of stories about my mess ups, including in No Drama Discipline, threatening to remove one of my children's body parts. Like, it's, you know, it's real. Currently now, my boys are 22, 19, and my baby will turn 16 this month. So I'm in kind of a new stage of mistakes, right? New stage of parenting mistakes. I will say, even though I teach this all the time and I know it, I still talk too much instead of creating space for them to arrive at what I know they would arrive to. So instead of me like asking a good question and pausing and waiting for them to get there, knowing all the good work I've invested, I know that they'll say like, yeah, maybe that's not such a good idea, or yeah, maybe, you know, maybe I need to think about that a little bit more. I still tell them, like, I don't know that that's a good idea. You know what I mean? Mm. So that's this mistake that I just keep making. And related to that is, you know, kind of micromanaging, or still trying to, you know, two of them are adults and they still need a ton of parenting. They do for sure. And letting them make mistakes, letting them figure it out and navigate it instead of me trying to, help, you know, prevent things from happening or make, you know, letting them trusting development to unfold in a way that allows them to get to what they need to learn when they're ready for it. So
yeah, exactly. And the way I explain it is I'm an ER nurse and I preach people like, don't eat too much salt. You know, like they come in for heart failure. Don't eat too much salt. Don't do that. Like I do those things. So yeah. We all fail at the things that we preach. And it's so good to just know that we're all human. So thank you for sharing that.
It's so true. It's so true.
What's something that you're like totally winning at right now as a mom?
I think two things immediately come to mind, which makes me happy that I can think of two right off the top of my head. One is I work really hard to bring what my friends Ned Johnson and Bill Stixrud say in their book, What Do You Say? A non-anxious presence. So whatever's happening, whatever adversity my kids are facing, you know, right now it's transition time, you know, there's always transitions happening. To really just say, yeah, that sounds tricky. How are we going to navigate that? Or, you know, you've got this, or we've got this, or, and to not freak out, to not bring an anxious energy to kind of, it's back to what we really talk about in our book, The Power of Showing Up, which is we really want to be the eye of the storm or the haven, you know, like the little safe harbor in mm-hmm. a storm. And I really feel like I'm doing a good job of that right now, that no matter what is happening, they know when they come to me, I'm not going to amplify their distress. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, stay that calm presence. Now, I might then later, you know, vent to my best friend or my husband yeah. or my mom and be like, oh my gosh, I hope this works out. But with my kid, I'm like, okay, we've got this. And so bringing that non-anxious presence is something I'm really winning at. And then the other thing just quickly is I'm really having a lot of fun with them. I think that's huge. It's just to have fun and delight in them, going to Dodgers games, watching funny videos, just telling, you know, like just being fun and bringing levity as opposed to everything being serious all the time. So
yeah,
having some fun with them.
Yeah. I love that you say that because I have young kids, 1 and 4, and people tell me all the time, and you know, the people that are like, just wait until, we love those people, right? People tell me all the time, wait until they're teenagers, you'll hate your life. And I love that you have essentially like teenagers and a little bit older than teenagers, and you're enjoying it. You're loving it.
I love it. I will tell you, here's the one, the jokes get better. The conversations get better and deeper. Mm-hmm. They're funnier. They're more interesting to talk to. I have loved my boys' teenage years and their young adult years. I mean, I really miss some of the old, you know, some of the other stuff, but
yeah,
it does not have to be what people say. It's so much of it depends on what you bring, who your kid is. Some kids are much easier than others in terms of their needs and how they respond to the world. And sometimes kids are not neurotypical, and that makes things even more challenging during the teenage years. But I will say that it can be a really, every phase can be hard and every phase can be amazing. That's kind of the messiness of reality.
Yeah. And I know you've been doing this whole parenting and like trying to be the best parent ever and teaching others how to be the best parent ever. Do you feel like because of your knowledge and background and just really just trying to be successful in that area has helped you be the parent that you are and also has helped your relationships with your kids?
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, when I wrote The Whole Brain Child with Dan Siegel, I think Ben was 4 or 5. I think my kids were like 6, 4, and 2 at that time or something, mm-hmm. maybe even younger than that. And what was happening is I was studying the neuroscience. What I was learning made me, actually, that started when my oldest was 18 months is when I really started digging into the science and learning all this interpersonal neurobiology. And it really, I started going, oh my gosh, this helps me see my child's behavior and how I should respond to it. And even development mm-hmm. and my role as a parent, it was totally transformative. And so I just feel so grateful. Now, certainly there's things I know now that I've learned, you know, since those early years that I'm like, oh, I wish I had done this differently or whatever. But I will say that learning about this informed me in a way that allowed me to definitely be a better parent. But more than that, I think because I talk about it all the time and I'm really, it is my life's work. Mm-hmm. I'm getting all those reps. So just like when I lift weights and I do reps, my muscles get stronger. I've gotten to like, so I'll hear myself say, you know, bring a non-anxious presence. That will be kind of in my mind today more, you know? Yeah. So I think it allows me to be more intentional. The flip side of that is it can make me more neurotic too. Mm-hmm. Like, when I knew that brain pruning starts, like what circuits you don't use, what connections you don't use start pruning at 6 months, I started freaking out. Like my kid's, you know, turning 6 months and I haven't exposed him to Mandarin and Spanish yet. Like, you know, he's never going to sound like a fluent speaker, you know, so it can make us neurotic. But I will tell you too, that the more I have learned, so now I've been doing this work. I turned 50 this last year. The more I've done this work, now I've been doing this work, you know, almost 30 years. The more I know, the less I worry about the things that I worried about. The more I feel like it's actually pretty simple what kids need.
Yeah.
They need safe, supportive, positive relationships, and for us to repair when we make mistakes, and for us to keep trying to be aware of ourselves and to trust development. Like, honestly, it's like, it's all big picture things. Like all the things I freaked out about and fretted about and spent hours toiling over my decisions, like none of those things matter as much as I thought they did. So in lots of ways, I feel like the more I learn and the more I've practiced this work, the more freedom it's given me to just enjoy them and be myself.
I love that you said that, because I've been doing, quote, I'm doing quote, air quotes, this work, aka learning how to be a good parent, for 4 years now. And I remember the first, especially the first 3.5 years, it's just been in the 6 months that I've chilled out a little bit. Yeah. I was crazy. I was like, okay, no, we have to say it this way because he's gonna, you know, we have to do it this way. Right. We have to recover. Like I was like, so
say good job. That'll ruin him forever if you say good job.
Yeah. I still, like, I was so strict. I swear my husband was like, what is wrong with her? Yeah. So
it's now, a lot.
Yeah. So now that I have my second, it's a lot harder to just focus on it all the time. And yes, I have a lot of work to do. I'm only 4 years in, but I do agree with you. The more I do it, the more I'm like, less is more. He just needs me to be his, like you said, his safe zone, you know? So thank you for saying that. And
I think the other thing too to know is that the brain like loves the automatic. So meaning like whatever we do over and over and over, the brain will just do automatically because that takes less attentional and energy resources. So the more we practice doing things the way we would like to do them, you know, our brains are plastic, they change, and that does become our automatic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, it's hard when you're trying, like hopefully some parent is listening to this and they'll get something today that'll really help them be the parent they want to be. But know that that doesn't just happen automatically. It's not like you just will yourself into doing. It's about reps. You're like, I'm going to try to do it 2 times today. And then, you know, and you just keep doing it. And then it becomes your default. It becomes what becomes automatic and who you become as a parent.
Yeah. And I want to be an advocate, devil's advocate, for the parents listening who don't have the resources that you and I have. Solid support system, a solid job, a solid goal in mind for what life is bringing. Like, I grew up with a single mom who fled a country of war twice. So she didn't have these resources. She didn't have time. Like, and by the way, 30 years ago, the internet wasn't really a thing, but some people just don't have time to listen to podcasts, to read books, to this and that. So I just want to be a devil's advocate. You can only do as much as you know, right? And if you don't know what's best, then you can't beat yourself up, right? And can you elaborate on like for parents like that who don't have the access to these resources because of whatever reason? What would you say to those parents?
I will say that this generation of parents, the standard of what people think is like really great parenting is actually in lots of ways unhealthy. It's actually what I would call hyper-parenting or neurotic parenting or over-functioning, right? And what's really troublesome, and there was a study that was done on this, is that families who don't have as many resources, who work multiple jobs, where there's a single parent, who don't have time to make woodland creature shape out of their cheese and their child's bento box lunch, you know, all of those things feel like they are not measuring up. But the truth is that the over-parenting, the hyper-parenting, let me say it this way. We are wrong in believing that we should be everything to and for our children. That is not good for our children. So what I'm saying to you is the less is more is exactly right. And then back to what we were saying a minute ago, you know, for sure, social media makes us think that our children's lunches need to be color-coded, organic, and with woodland creature shape cheese. none of that matters. What really matters is the most simple things, like love the crap out of your kids, delight in them, even if it's just a few minutes once a day. When you mess up, make a repair, all those things. And so in The Power of Showing Up, what Dan and I wrote about is over 70 years of cross-cultural research that really shows one of the best predictors for how well kids turn out is that they have at least one person who provides them with secure attachment. And let me just be really clear, what I'm talking about is not at all anything to do with attachment parenting. I'm not talking about attachment parenting. I'm talking about a body of research that is looking at mammals and, you know, that is under the umbrella of developmental psychology. This is based in science. And really what Dan and I say is, okay, so if that's true, and we believe it to be because of the solid, solid research, how do we cultivate that secure attachment? What is most important? Because when we don't have a lot of resources or we don't have a huge capacity because the demands of the world are so great on us, what's most important in order to give our kids the best benefit? And we came up with the four S's, which is helping them feel safe, helping them feel seen and understood so that they're like, yeah, my parent gets me. They really understand who I am. So they really, that's really about tuning into their internal world and their experiences and their feelings, not just their behaviors. The third S is soothed. That's helping them, supporting them, showing up when they need us the most. Because at their worst, that's when they need us to really show up, including sometimes what looks like bad behavior, but really for them to know, like, if I have a need, they're going to see it and show up for me. And then the fourth is secure, which is really the idea that your brain gets wired because you have had not perfect, but enough predictable experiences of feeling safe and seen and soothed, that your brain wires to know that, that when things go wrong or when you have a need, people show up for you. And then their brains get wired for them to do that for themselves. So they learn how to help keep themselves safe and see and understand themselves and soothe themselves and show up for other people. So I think that's the most important thing to me. That is my North Star. There are a million moments where I don't have the capacity. I don't have the ability or the time or the emotional bandwidth to do things. Or even as a clinician, as a professional, there are times with a client or with my own children, I'm not sure the right thing to do or say. That is always my North Star. How can I respond in a way that helps this other person? And by the way, it's really good in your marriage and with your best friend too. How do I help this other person feel safe and seen and soothed and know that I will keep showing up for them? That's what guides me. And that's what's most important. We can let go of the rest. You don't have to do all the other fancy things.
Yeah. And say you mess up, like, I did not make my child feel any of those four S's right now because I'm having a hard time. What do you recommend then?
That's where the repair comes in. This is why I love the attachment science, because it's so full of hope. It basically tells us that when we mess up, not if, but when we mess up, as long as we make the repair with our child, it's actually beneficial for them that we messed up. I know. Isn't that great news?
And I just want to ask, is it normal to mess up like multiple times a day?
Yes, not just normal, but to be expected. We have human brains, right? And I think that's such a huge key. That, I mean, that's such a huge thing, is the ability to regulate our own emotional states. Because most of the time, at least for me, and when I talk to other parents, when we mess up, it's not really what the child is doing. It's not really what's happening in the moment. It's much more about us reacting out of our own internal chaos that we are not managing well. So let me give a couple of suggestions. So the repair is simple. It's really just like, I'll tell a story about a time my boys were fighting with each other. It was like just escalating. And instead of stopping things and having a reset for everybody, I just kept going. We were playing Yahtzee. And eventually I yelled and I threw the dice across the room like a crazy person. And so now I've messed up. Like, they don't feel totally safe. I'm not going to hurt them. They know I'm not going to hurt them. I've never hurt them. But now all of a sudden I'm patient. And then I'm not. And I'm really unpredictable. And the reason it makes kids not feel safe when we fly off the handle is not necessarily because they know we're going to hurt them, but because the way this works is that we're supposed to keep them safe in the world. But if we are not even in control of ourselves in that moment, how can we keep them safe in the world, right? And predictability makes us feel safe. Unpredictability tells the brain potential threat. We don't know what's going to happen here. So I've violated their sense of safety. And what I need to do in that moment is to pause and collect myself, give myself as much time as I need, and then to say, guys, I got mad there and I did not handle that well. Now, notice, I'm not going to say if you guys had listened and had stopped fighting, that wouldn't have happened, because I want them to know that they are responsible for their own behavior no matter what happens. So I'm not going to blame them for my behavior. I have to take responsibility. So I say, I got mad and I didn't handle that well. I'm really sorry that I yelled. I really wish I had done that differently. I should have calmed myself down first. I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? And I might even ask for a do-over. So it's really just about apologizing, connecting, letting them talk about what their experience was like if they want to. And then the other thing is just to say, like, what I would really encourage all of us to do after those moments where we act like fools or we're out of control or we're not the parent we want to be, instead of going down the shame spiral and beating ourselves up, and we don't want to do that because it actually makes us more likely to fall apart more the next day because it leaves us in a negative state. Instead, be curious, just like we want to be curious about our kids' behavior, to say, okay, that was not how I wanted to be. What was that about for me? Mm-hmm. Because then when we become curious, what got in the way of me being the parent I wanted to be? It allows us to make a shift. Mm-hmm. So that curiosity opens our brain up to be more receptive instead of reactive. And then, like, oftentimes my answer was, I am so tired, or I'm really hungry. Resentful toward, I'm hungry. I haven't peed by myself in 3 years. You know, I'm resentful toward my husband because he just let all that happen and he didn't come in and help me. Yeah. And I haven't had a break, you know, like, so there might be things like that. Or like, I haven't had an adult conversation, or I'm exhausted. You know, it might be that kind of thing. And then other times, and then you're like, okay, I need to take care of myself better. Like, I'm responsible mm-hmm. for that. Or it might be like, every time my kid rejects me, that triggers me. I wonder what that's about. Let's mm-hmm. be curious about that. Why is that a trigger for me? And when we start to begin to create awareness, it gives us a choice to do things differently. So I love this hopeful research that really just says you can mess up all the time. The other thing I will say is that I want to give parents permission. This is something I didn't learn for many years, and I wish I had known it from the beginning. When things are falling apart, your kids are fighting with each other, you are mad at them, you've done amazing, fun things for them all day, and instead of being grateful when they ask for a piece of gum and you say no, they cry like it's the worst day they've ever had, and then you're mad because you think they're spoiled. Like, all of these moments, we've been told wrongly, this is based in old research that was done in the 50s on animals, that we have to deal with a situation right then and there or they won't learn. That is true of dogs. It is not true of humans, not even two-year-olds. After a nap and a snack, when your child is much more ready to listen and be receptive, that's the moment where we can say, hey, let's tell the story of how you threw your shoe at mommy's face earlier. What I'm saying is, when something is happening in the moment with your child and you feel like you have to address it, but you know you're not going to do well, you know you're going to be more reactive than you want to be, you know you're going to be more impatient, or if something's happening with you and you're feeling reactivity inside of you, you don't have to deal with it in that moment. I give you permission to pause, to wait, to come back to it. It's fine to even say to your kids, you know what, I need, like I've said to my kids a million times, if I respond to you right now, it's not going to be the parent you want to see, and it's not the parent I want to be. So I need a minute. I need to take a break so I can handle this the way I want to. Mm. Or to just say, I need a minute. Give me a minute. I need to think about it. I need to go to the bathroom. Give me a second. Mm. Give yourself the pause, because if we give ourselves a minute of space, a minute of pause, we can actually do a much better job most of the time, because it is coming out of our internal chaos and giving ourselves that space.
That's so important. I want to highlight what you said. It is okay to address what happened later. You don't have to deal with it in the moment. I'm so guilty of like reacting and acting in the moment. And it always ends up being yelling and asking, why did you do that? And I kind of want to back up. I had my listeners submit some questions. And one of the top questions was sibling rivalry and drama. So you have older kids, so you could be like, hey guys, what about people who have, like me, a one-year-old and a four-year-old, and my four-year-old is like, and I know there's always a deeper issue. Like, he's seeking connection. He's this and that. He doesn't want to share. What would you say to a parent who has a young child who can't really defend themselves, and then a child always getting physical or tackling them? This podcast episode is brought to you by Dime Beauty. In order to love your skin again, you have to take care of it. Dime Beauty is luxurious skincare and beauty that is clean, effective, and affordable. I've been using a variety of Dime Beauty products for over 2 years, and as a busy mom of two in her 30s, I can genuinely say that Dime has changed my skincare game. I've noticed that I go way more days without makeup, and on days that I do wear makeup, my skin literally glows. My favorite products are the Eyelash Boost Serum, Hyper Glow Serum, and the Hyaluronic Acid. I literally cannot go a day without those three. And you can shop Dime Beauty at www.dimebeauty.com and use code MAMANOSE20 for 20% off site-wide.
So first, let me just say, sibling conflict for me was the most unpleasant part of parenting. If I look back over 22 years, it was the part that drove me the most crazy. Okay. I will also say that the research shows that siblings who have a lot of conflict and fight with each other have a much better likelihood of being better at navigating conflict. And they tend to be better friends with each other versus the kids who don't have conflict and kind of just do their own things and kind of live separate lives. So this is how they learn how to argue, and they know they can't lose their siblings' love, so they try all kinds of things. This sibling conflict stuff that we're talking about is one of the best tool building experiences they will have for emotional regulation, for relationships, all of these things. So, and by the way, if you only have one, that's perfectly fine. They do not miss out on those things. They learn them in other ways. So I just want to normalize sibling conflict. I will say too, if you parent in a way where you are teaching your children skills and coaching them along the way, by the time development unfolds more, you will just not see as much. So I will answer your question, but let me give one big overarching thing. Mm-hmm. The way we think about discipline and sibling conflict and hitting a sibling or being too rough with them, those are all discipline moments. Let me take a minute to talk about discipline. The whole point and purpose of discipline is for your children to become self-disciplined. If you are an effective disciplinarian, then that means you're disciplining less and less over time because your child is handling situations on their own in the right way. The way that that happens is by teaching and skill building. So every discipline moment is all about teaching and skill building. Most of what we do in the name of discipline does not really teach or build skills. It's actually counterproductive because we often do it in moments where things are running hot and our child is reactive. So the brain is either in a reactive state where it's really difficult to learn or build skills, or the brain is in a receptive state where it's ready to learn. It can take in information. So again, timing is everything. In the moment when people are mad, it's probably the worst time to address the behavior and discipline. Discipline is not just giving consequences. It is back to teaching. If you give a consequence that doesn't teach anything, you're not going to have a behavior change at all. It's all back to teaching and skill building. So everything we do in the moment, we want to be asking, is this response that I'm giving in this moment going to make it more likely over time that my child can do better the next time? Or is it not? If it's not, then we need to shift our strategy. Now, all of that, though, is in the context of development unfolding. Mm-hmm. Just like we wouldn't expect a four-month-old to be toilet trained because they are not ready to do it, we can't expect a two-year-old, a three-year-old, a four-year-old, or even a five-year-old to be regulated all the time and to be able to control their bodily impulses with their siblings. They are not developmentally ready to do that consistently. So we just know we have to wait for development to unfold. But during that time, we're doing skill building and teaching all along the way. Now, for those moments specifically that you're talking about, we want to be as proactive as possible, right? Supervision. I know, you're like, I just want to go to the bathroom by myself for 1 minute, right? It's really hard.
Can you not put your sister in a chokehold, please? Like,
exactly. I feel like my expectations are not. Okay, so yeah, so we want to be really, really proactive. Certain times or situations, you know, things are more likely to occur. So the way that we teach young children around the ages that you're talking about in this situation is we want to address the feeling, address the behavior, and move on. we spend way too much time talking and talking and talking about the misbehavior. And what we're doing is we're further reinforcing and giving attention to the misbehavior. So let's say the four-year-old is too rough with the one-year-old. So obviously we would want to step in, protect the one-year-old, and we would address the feelings like you were frustrated that she was in your way. That was frustrating. So we're naming the feeling. We address the behavior. You have to be gentle. Be gentle with her body. And you might even, and it's fine, you can say it in the positive, be gentle with your sister. You can say you can't put your arm around her neck, right? You can be specific in the negative. That's fine too. Either way, say it both. So you're addressing the behavior. And then I would move the heck on. Hey, I think I hear birds outside. Let's go out. Let's go see if there are birds outside. So you shift things. Now, if they're around 3.5, 4, 5, and especially if they tend to be, great with their facility of language and you know that they understand a lot, you can then give an alternative. So then you can say, what could you do next time when you're frustrated, and have them start participating and coming up with alternatives. The truth is you're going to have to address it 100 times until they start building those skills as development unfolds. The other thing is to ask them, 3 and 4 year olds particularly love to have positions of power. They love to be in charge of things. Mm-hmm. So you mobilize that need. So you're like, I really need you to help me because you're in charge of your sister's safety. You're in charge of keeping her safe. So what do we need to do? Is there anything around the area that wouldn't be safe for her? And can you make sure that nobody hurts her? So you embolden them to be kind of the safety, you know, in charge of the safety, and being your helper. So those are some other things we can try.
Yeah. Thank you. That can I try that? Let you know how that goes.
But honestly, the truth is a lot of it is waiting it out for development to unfold, lots of supervision, lots of prevention. And you could even do some role play with some dolls. Like you know, you could be like too rough and be like, you tell me when it's too much, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you can laugh about it. You can also do some role play with plushies.
Yeah. It's so good to hear that it's okay. It's normal.
Normal.
And then another really popular question was, and I feel like you kind of touched on this briefly, is my partner and I have different parenting. This is not me and my partner, but someone said this, my partner and I have different parenting styles. What do I do?
Well, I will say that I've done thousands and thousands and thousands of parenting consults, and I've never met any couple that was on the exact same page. You want to kind of hope to be in the same chapter, or even in the same book. It's actually beneficial for kids to have parents who are a little bit different from each other. In fact, it's great prefrontal strategy work for them to be like, which parent is more likely to say yes to this wish? Like, that's really good for kids because they have to figure out how to think about other people's minds and how to get what they want in the world. That's really an amazing skill we want our kids to have. What I will say is that very few parents are exactly, you know, on the same page. Where the mistake typically happens that I've seen over and over and over again is typically one parent is on the more strict side and, you know, is much more kind of command and demand, has, you know, really high expectations. And the other parent tends to be a little softer, more permissive, gives kids more leeway, changes their mind, gives in more, you know, that kind of thing. And here's the mistake. Each of them thinks the other is doing it wrong. So what happens is they continue. So the stricter parent becomes more strict to compensate for the softer parent. And the permissive parent becomes more permissive to compensate for the stricter parent. And they become further and further away from each other. And then they're parenting in reaction to each other as opposed to what is actually happening with their child and what their child needs. So what's really important is to have good communication with your partner. Whether you're married to them or not, you're a co-parent, you need to have good communication. That's really challenging lots of times. And sometimes that's where support can come in. Just like we pay people to do our taxes sometimes, or, you know, we take our car to the car wash, we sort of outsource things from time to time. It can be really helpful to have a parenting specialist weigh in on some issues that you are in conflict about, or to answer some questions. But what I will say is the communication is really important. Typically, when parents become really rigid around something and really reactive, there's an underlying layer of fear. So when you're in conflict with the other parent around how to handle something, it's really important to say, tell me more about that. Bring curiosity to that conversation. You know, I hear you saying that you feel like it's a mistake to do it this way. Tell me more about what you're thinking, you know, about your thinking, as opposed to just fighting and defending your position. Lean in with curiosity. And sometimes in those conversations, the underlying issue is there's a fear of the child being spoiled, or there's a fear of the child being intimidated by the parent, or whatever it is. So try to get to the fear, because when you get there, you understand each other better and you can really make headway. Mm-hmm. Finally, I will say that it's really important you don't undermine the other parent. Ahead of time, when one of you is escalating and the other one tends to step in, that can feel really maddening. Like, I know at times I was being really impatient with my boys or whatever, and my husband would come in and he'd be like, remember, connect and redirect. And I was like, do not quote my work to me when I am mad. Like, I hate you right now. But what's important is that then we were like, okay, let's have a signal. So like, if you come in, you hear me yelling, you want to come up and relieve me and take over. Let's have a signal. So you come up and kind of like wiggle your ear, which is like, hey, babe, I'm here to support you. How can I help? Which has a very different meaning of, you're not doing this right, so I'm taking over. So it's really about communicating, how can I help? I'm here to, you go take care of yourself. Let me handle it here. And that way you're not fighting then in that moment. So you're giving each other, and then later talk about it. Be like, hey, you know, I heard this happening and here's my worry about that. Can you tell me more about that? And just really have communication around things after they've happened. And then hopefully ahead of time, you can say, how do you want me to handle this? When I hear you yelling, I want to come and relieve you. I want to come and make sure the kids are okay, but I don't want to step on your toes. How would you like me to handle that? What would feel good to you? Mm-hmm. So those are some things we can do ahead of time.
Yeah, that's so important to, like you said, to communicate about the things that you want and that are important to you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to do those things all the time. I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of needing that control of, okay, the experts say this is how it should be, so this is how we both should do it. Right. And like I said, it's taken me 3.5 years, but I'm kind of off that path. So it's really important to just to communicate what, I also think it's good to have non-negotiables. Like, for us, example, like hitting and timeouts, they're like non-negotiables. We will not be doing those things.
Yeah.
So thank you.
So try to get on the same page about your non-negotiables. And and I'll tell you too, it's really fascinating when parents would come in to see me, I would say, well, you know, what's your discipline philosophy? How do you all handle this? And they looked at me like, what do you mean? And I will tell you, most parents do not have a discipline philosophy. They don't have something that guides them. So what that means is that all those little micro moments of having to deal with stuff are fly by the seat of your pants kind of discipline. And for me, that's not good. I need a guiding philosophy and some non-negotiables, because otherwise I'll respond to my own internal stress or anger or frustration. So I think, you know, that's why the idea of thinking about discipline is teaching, so that your child builds skills so that they can do better over time. Mm-hmm. Like, if I yell at my kid, that doesn't teach them any skills. That's not teaching. So that's not something I want to do in discipline moments. It's going to happen and then I'm going to make a repair, but that's not what I want to do. Same thing with timeouts. They typically don't learn much in timeouts. Much better to say, you hurt your brother and I know, you know, it's not okay to hit. So that's the kind of, that's how I would talk to them as they start getting into 5 and up, is to say, I know, you know, it's not okay to hurt your brother. So what was, you know, what happened there for you? And then let them do some reflection, and then to say, how can you make it right with him? And then going and making the repair and doing those things, those teach kids in ways that, you know, go to your room doesn't, and time out doesn't, or yelling, those don't teach skills. So if you're disciplining in ways that aren't teaching skills, you're not, you're making things hard on yourself too, because that means you're going to have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I will say, by the time my oldest was about 15 or 16 and his brain development kind of happened, my other two were then 12 and 9. We have had very, almost no sibling fighting and conflict since that time.
That's awesome.
So part of it is just you put in the work early and know that it pays off.
Yeah. I think what I took away from today is less is more. Mm-hmm. Gentle parenting is a nickname and possibly a cult, because I was part of it. And do what feels right and love your child, right? Like the four S's, like you said.
And I think we didn't really get to get into all of the gentle parenting stuff much, but we did. We kind of hit on it in several ways. So let me just say this. you don't have to be so precious and careful about every single thing you do and say. And gentle parenting is not a manualized approach. It's really the idea of being respectful of your child's emotions and body and regulating yourself. So it depends on how people define it. I think it gets cultish if people are like, you have to say these things, you can't say these things, you have, when it becomes, and I'll say that about anything obsessive about one approach, it's actually typically not good or healthy. It becomes something typically that people latch onto when they become really anxious about what they're doing. So they latch onto approach and they follow it letter of the law, or they follow it in a way that becomes obsessive. We need lots of tools. We need lots of approaches, and we have to really follow our child's, you know, what's happening in the moment, and really follow our instincts as long as we're trying to be aware about them. So I think anytime we become really like neurotic, obsessive about any approach, whether it's gentle parenting or anything else, that means we're typically following ideas instead of what's actually happening in the moment with our child, where we really want to attune to what's going on and be intentional in those moments. So gentle parenting is not bad, but when we feel like there are rules we have to follow, that can become, it can become problematic, definitely.
Yeah. And I definitely was in that place at one point and still sometimes get there. And it's because I grew up without any like specific style. Authoritative is authoritarian. Which one's the one that's like strict and
authoritarian?
Authoritarian, very strict. I mean, it was like old school. So for me, I knew I didn't want to do that. So I feel like I tried to stay away from it. So I got obsessed with.
Yeah.
So I'm guilty. And the reason I say that now is because I built a huge platform around that. A huge platform around gentle parenting. And I've really come away from that in the last 6 months. Not completely, because parenting, I'm still very passionate about. I'm passionate about being the best version of yourself. But I also have learned that I shouldn't be preaching that you should follow these rules, because every kid is different. Every mom is different. So thank you for saying that.
People define terms differently. Like by gentle parenting, if it means respecting your child's body and emotions and being really respectful in how you communicate with your child, great. Do that. Let that guide you. Mm-hmm. But if it's a bunch of rules that you feel like you have to follow, like don't say this and make sure you do this, and then we're letting something else that is something else to guide us versus what our children really need. And I think, you know, you mentioned authoritarian parenting, authoritative parenting, you know, and Aliza and I talk about that in that podcast you mentioned at the beginning, is that is still solid science backed an approach, which is not about rules. It's about having high expectations and boundaries and limits that we can enforce with our children, and should. Having that predictability makes them feel safe, while also being emotionally responsive and nurturing and warm and connected. And the problem is, historically, people have thought of strict parenting, limits, boundaries, that kind of thing, as the opposite of warmth and connection and empathy and gentleness. But actually, for decades and decades and decades, we've known that the two of those should go together. They are not opposites of each other. They should go together. So let that guide us as we try to be the parents we want to be.
Yes, thank you. And I feel like we could literally talk for hours, but we got to wrap it up. And I want my people to know where they can find you and find, I mean, I have all your books, so I'm definitely going to link those up. They're actually linked up in my blog post called Gentle Parenting Resources.
It's great. They are. They are gentle parenting resources. I love gentle parenting.
Yeah.
Depending on how people do it.
Yes, yes. But I feel like my definition is different than some, like you said. Anyways, and that was a viral post. So I will make sure to link all your books down below, but also tell us where we can find you.
My website is tinabryson.com, and that's BRYSON. And then I'm all over social media, particularly on Instagram at Tina Payne Bryson. And, you know, I'm still really delighted that so many people have loved the books. The Bottom Line for a Baby has been a really fun book because it was the book I wanted most as a parent, and it still didn't exist. So I wrote it. And in fact, there's a whole section in there on discipline. It's an alphabetical book. It's more like a reference book. People can flip to the topic and hear what the science says about that topic in very short form, like 3 minutes, you can get informed. And I wrote about discipline in that book, even though it's for babies, because it helps us set our philosophy from the very beginning. So hopefully people will find me, connect. I've been on lots of podcasts, but hopefully this will be helpful as people listen. And just know, you listeners, you're a better parent than you think you are. And what your child needs most from you is you.
Yes. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
Tina really helped deliver the message that I haven't known how to put into words on my social media. Less is more. And that's something I've really learned in the last 6 months. The first 3.5 years of my son's life were super hard. And yeah, there were some amazing moments, of course, but I felt like I was constantly trying to follow the rules. And my second child changed that for me. I hope that you took something amazing away from this episode, and I hope you give Tina Bryson a follow, read her books, and then also rate my podcast if you enjoyed this episode. Let's chat next week.